Well, hello there. This is Retrice Lead, and I have to tell you what just happened. We had hordes of landscapers. They're still trying to finish cleaning up, and there's a lot of mowing and cutting and noise going on. So, and it was right outside of my side of the building, and I had to go down and ask, please, I need some quiet. This is a very, very important day. And, I need the noise to go away if it's okay by you. So they had to call their supervisor to find out if they could stop. So finally, they were given permission to stop for a while. And that's what I was doing. So, and I can't run as fast as I used to. So here we are. That's Frank Strozier, by the way, who starts off the program today on alto sax, opening Cloudy and Cool with Billy Wallace on piano, Bill Lee on bass, and Vernell Fournier on drums. This is from his 1960 album, Cool, Calm, and Collected. You know, just the way I am right now. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And a very, very important program today. And we have as our guest someone whose voice is familiar to us, and certainly his knowledge is familiar to us when it comes to the Clinton Foundation. And we're breaking a major story today regarding the Clintons' massive charity fraud. Finding out also that in the search for truth about the Clinton Foundation, we find that they have lots of company, but everyone faces a whole new dimension of life as of today. Welcome, Charles. I'm not hearing Charles.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Now we're having quite a time today.
I just said I don't need a last name anymore. You just refer to me as a welcoming Charles.
Charles Ortel. Okay.
That's okay.
Well, so the Bill Hillary and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, as our listeners know and have come to know, didn't get to be what you have called and been calling the largest unprosecuted charity fraud in the United States, in U.S. history. They had a great deal of help. Lots of people who were on board with what they were doing, and what they were doing was not good. Under the guise that the foundation was, and still is, operating a range of philanthropy, philanthropic programs that claim to do good works, as they say. The foundation, as we have learned over the last 2 years, really is nothing more than a slush fund. However, the probes that were warranted certainly did not come to fruition. There were many, many requests that people look into the Clinton Foundation, and you have coursed us through the details of how this foundation managed to run a number of programs that they described as philanthropic in nature, and the integrity of those programs also failed the smell test. But today, Charles, why is today a very interesting, and it promises to be a turning point?
Well, that's because Senior Charles, that is to say, I think he's 82 or 84-year-old Chuck Grassley, I think he's from Iowa, who is an eminent individual, not simply because he seems to have made a decision now to opened an investigation into the Clinton Foundation, But because over his lifetime of public service, he's been, a vigilant person holding Democrats and Republicans in his own party to account, to make sure that justice is served and to make sure that the taxpayers' money are spent only for their, you know, for the purposes to which they've been authorized. So what happened overnight is that John Solomon, who is actually somebody I know, who hired me briefly to write at the Washington Times and to do a radio show there a number of years ago. John Solomon is a distinguished investigative reporter with a long career, I think, starting at the Washington Post and all over the place, currently at The Hill, which is not exactly, you know, a right-wing ideological stomping ground. He had a devastating piece out yesterday with his colleague, I think, Sarah Carter at Circa News, revealing for the first time a pattern that we've seen in a number of different instances where the FBI and the Department of Justice appears to have had extremely damaging, incriminating information concerning the Clinton Foundation and the likelihood that monies were routed towards the Clinton Foundation while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State in 2009 through 2013 and afterwards. Monies were routed towards the Clinton Foundation, it seems, as payoff to enable a controversial transaction wherein a Russian-influenced entity acquired control of 20% of America's uranium supplies. Now, uranium is used to manufacture nuclear weapons, and those, I gather, might hurt. Actually, they probably wouldn't hurt if they were dropped on you. You wouldn't know what happened. But this revelation went out yesterday and set Washington, D.C. on fire. And almost immediately, Chuck Grassley opened an investigation. It happened that Attorney General Jeff Sessions was scheduled to speak today, to testify today, and he's testifying, I think, even now, if he's not at lunch, on that famous topic popularized by Hillary Clinton, what happened, or what happened. He was called on the carpet today to explain exactly what has been going on for so long. Why did the Obama administration, while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State from 2009 to 2013, why did the Obama administration miss the fraudulent filings, in my view, of the Clinton Foundation and of its allied charities for so many years? Now, the bombshells that were revealed yesterday include the fact that apparently the very people, the very person who recommended that Bob Mueller, Special Counsel Mueller, be appointed to investigate the Trump possible collusion with Russia. That very man, Rod Rosenstein, was in charge of an investigation that apparently may have known as early as 2009 that there was suspicious money flowing towards the Clinton Foundation, possibly from a foreign government. And you know, instead of making a big to-do of this and launching the kind of investigation which the American people are owed, Rod Rosenstein and the Department of Justice and the FBI, first under Mueller and then later under Comey, settled for what seems like an innocuous penalty of around $2 million, where, you know, if you really pulled on this scab and opened the wound, the notion that you would have the Russian, you know, possibly Russian government, foreign government-influenced people routing money to the husband of a sitting Secretary of State, while she was Secretary of State, while she was supposedly resetting the relationship, while John Podesta and Tony Podesta, two close confidants, and I think Podesta was campaign chairman, wasn't he, of the Hillary's presidential campaign, while they were taking money from Juul Unlimited, which is a definitely a Russian government-related entity, you know, all of this pay-to-play, money for influence, apparently has just been left alone by the Internal Revenue Service, which has awesome power and could have brought all of this to light beginning in 2009 when it was first known, or 10 when it was first known, including the Department of Justice, including the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which is not a Federal Bureau of, quote, matters. It's a bureau that should really investigate. So this all was made public yesterday in an article on The Hill and in a companion piece in Circa, both of which have links to the underlying source documents, which people are now still evaluating. Now, Chuck Grassley's committee has, you know, tremendous experience and subpoena power and depth of understanding and trained lawyers who get around these issues. And so what's happened today is monumental, because now that Grassley has opened up this investigation, he's begun a process which, when it moves towards its expected conclusion, has got to reveal the contours and indeed the specifics of this, the largest charity fraud ever perpetrated in history, which happens to be being led by a former president of the United States and by an aspiring president of the United States, both of whom cannot claim ignorance as an excuse. Both of them are eminent lawyers. Both of them went to Yale Law School, which is very tough to get into. Both of them followed their period at law school with, you know, one might argue, distinguished careers in various ways. They can't say they didn't understand that you can't use a charity, presidential library, as a slush fund to enrich yourself and to fund political campaigns and to seed influence around the world. You can't claim you didn't know what you were doing.
So now, with regard to this investigation, Charles, the amount of money being focused on here, and it is not yet verified, but it is at least talking now in the ballpark of $145 million, just this one project.
Right. And so there, you know, let me explain for our listeners the many elements of why this is going to topple the Clinton. The first element is that this supposedly began in 2009. Now, the Clinton Foundation publishes on its website, if you Google Clinton Foundation and annual report, you'll get to that website, doctored versions of their IRS filings. It's not the real version. And I know this because the real versions are available at New York State Attorney General Charity Bureau Search and California Attorney General and Massachusetts Attorney General. They have the real version. And so what the Clintons were trying to hide is the total amount, many things, but one of the things they were trying to hide was the amount of money that actually was sent to them in the form of government grants and grants from major foundations by initiative, right? They wanted you just to see the amount that went supposedly towards the whole Clinton Foundation. The amounts by initiative are laid out in the New York State Attorney General's website and the other websites. And it is impossible to reconcile what is on those filings with what donors have declared they sent towards the Clinton Foundation for various purposes in 2009 and in other years, but to pick on 2009. So 2009, the biggest piece of the Clinton Foundation was something called Clinton Foundation HIV-AIDS Initiative or Clinton HIV-AIDS Initiative. They used both names. That's an overwhelming majority, 98% of all grants supposedly went to that entity. The trouble for the Clintons, and they know this because there's a memo dated 10 November 2008 on WikiLeaks that shows us this. Bruce Lindsay, the CEO of the Clinton Foundation, received a memo from somebody called Kamiki Gibson, which explained the dire state of the Clinton Foundation just scant days before Valerie Jarrett signed the co-chairman of the transition committee for President-elect Obama in 2008. Just days before they signed an MOU saying everything's hunky-dory and the gem in the ore or the firmament of parts of the Clinton Foundation is this HIV-AIDS fighting entity. They knew that that entity had lost its authority to operate from its headquarters base in Massachusetts on March 31st, 2008. They knew that all during 2009 it was not operating lawfully, yet it was soliciting funds from multiple foreign governments, for the biggest donor to the Clinton Foundation, Unitaid. They knew all this. They knew what happened. And nonetheless, they submitted these fraudulent tax filings for 2009 and a fraudulent audit for 2009 that failed to note these mortal defects. You cannot operate a foundation illegally anywhere. You can't, when you're engaged in tax-exempt organizations, you're not allowed to break any law of any kind, state, federal, or foreign. And they, as lawyers, do this. But nonetheless, they filed this document, this Form 990, which you can't tell on the Clinton Foundation website the degree of the defects, but when you look through the state regulatory filings, you can see that the amounts of money that are laid out on the Clinton Foundation. They have to lay out all major donations. Now, history will probably show that a fatal flaw in their cover-up was that on the main site, they do give you a listing for 2009 without identifying the donors of each significant donor who may have given 2% or more. That's what's called Schedule B. And if you go to Schedule B, there's a very limited set of numbers there. I don't have them in front of me, but I think it's like 8 numbers, 9 numbers in total. There's a big number of small donations less than 2%. There's another small stock donations, less, you know, donations of common stock less than 2%. But the residual numbers do not reconcile with the $85 million that Unite, that's the biggest donor, supposedly gave, or this $145 million number, which may have been broken into different pieces. But the math just doesn't simply work for 2009. And here's the real problem. The real problem is that the IRS had to know this in 2010. They had to be able to look and cross-check what the Clinton Foundation filings said, because the versions in the IRS do give you the specific identities of each donor. The IRS then would have had the ability to cross-check what the Clinton said in their filing with what the donor said. And I'm told by a reliable source that the IRS did cross-check around this time frame and did notice the discrepancy. So why didn't they do anything about this? And, you know, this is all in the period when this filing for 2009 went in, is after the election of 2010, when the Tea Party and conservatives and Republicans did surprisingly well. So did the political wing, and some might say that, you know, the entire Obama administration was all extremely political, did the political wing of the Obama administration decide, oh my goodness, do we have a problem here? We have a former president who appears to be running a global slush fund. We have tax forms that, you know, suggest we ought to shut this thing down. Instead of doing that and creating additional ammunition for the Republicans and the conservatives, why don't we just cover this up? And why don't we continue to cover this up, you know, all during the time that Hillary Clinton is Secretary of State, all during the time Obama's second term, President Obama's second term. And then, oh my goodness, Donald Trump wins. What are we going to do about that? So, I mean, this, you know, in the whole Watergate era, people said the cover-up is worse than the crime. And that, I think, is exactly the case here. And, Trace, you have been so generous with your platform here, letting me talk to your listeners. People are always talking about how the right and the left are so divided, we can't agree about anything. We can agree that charity fraud is deplorable. It's not despicable. And it's especially so when a former president and an aspiring president are the leaders of that activity around the world before all to see. So, and why is this charity fraud? You're not allowed to operate a charity to secure authority from the IRS and from state governments, taxing authorities, and foreign governments to say you're going to run a presidential library and then instead have a whole bunch of people who may or may not be officially connected, who may or may not be monetizing their relations to a foundation, running around the world, in theory fighting HIV/AIDS, in theory fighting climate change, in theory running a convening session, in theory doing all sorts of things that sound wonderful, but were never actually authorized. You're simply not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to submit tax forms into the IRS, into state regulators, into foreign regulators, that are false and materially misleading, that omit crucial documents, that, doctor documents. You just can't do that and fundraise. And the penalties are very severe, as we've talked. Corinne Brown, this congressperson who in Florida, who lost out in a special election after serving for about 20 years or so, she was convicted. She was prosecuted in the middle of her 2016 campaign. She lost that election. She was then convicted promptly, unlike the Clintons, who haven't yet been prosecuted for anything. She was immediately prosecuted right in the middle of her campaign, almost exactly when James Comey, in my mind, illegally dropped his investigation, or when that investigation may have been obstructed. This person was vigorously prosecuted and convicted, I want to say, on 18 or so federal counts. She awaits sentencing. She may be sentenced, you know, around sometime in the, you know, any day now or in November. Meanwhile, the Clinton Foundation has yet to amend, it's yet to file tax forms for its initial short period, October 23, 1997 to December 31, 97, yet to amend all of its fraudulently previously filed tax forms, and they face a final filing deadline of November 15, 2017, when, if they fail to correct the record and fail to file these proper tax forms, they certainly will have knowingly filed and therefore knowingly made, under penalties of perjury, numerous false statements, each of which is punishable by massive prison terms and financial penalties. Then you get into, you know, Clintons and Hillary in particular, I think, coined this idea of the vast right-wing conspiracy. They are running a vast, I don't want to say it's left-wing, a vast partisan slush fund, the largest ever. And it's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy to defraud the United States of America, in my view. I am not a lawyer, but I looked around at some of the federal statutes that might apply, one of which is 18 U.S.C. 371, which, you know, it's a conspiracy to a number of people acting in concert to defraud the United States of tax revenue. And then, you know, going back to your original question, Yatrice, what Senator Grassley should really be focusing on here, if he wants my opinion, is the idea that Hillary Clinton was a government official, a U.S. government official. You are not allowed, while being a U.S. government official, to have your husband and daughter swan around the world gaining valuable cash from foreign governments or from foreign principals, which are defined as, it's not simply foreign governments. It could be private people, you're not allowed to do that, you know, and it seems that they actually did do that.
When this started out early in the game, I raised a question about Hillary Clinton's overseas travel. She was forever on a plane going somewhere and was never able to produce a report as to why travel to these various countries was necessary, what she did there, what was the outcome, what was the benefit for the United States. And at the time, just pure instinct, I said that Hillary Clinton was doing her own business on government time and at government expense. So we have that to factor in. Besides which, the current focus, let's say this $145 million, this relates to just one project that they were dealing with the Russians on.
Right.
Okay. But the Clinton Foundation, by this time that they started this project, had been basically doing other business all over the world, getting money from governments, from institutions, from individuals, partnering with very wealthy people in doing these specious projects that they called good works all over the world, like distributing these bogus drugs in all throughout Africa and the Caribbean to fight HIV/AIDS. We never did get a figure for all that time that they were operating independently of the Russian project. What kind of money was involved, what they doled out as favors for this money, but more importantly, we also want to know, how did they manage to hide the money, which is the same question that applies with the Russian project. How did they make $145 million, for example, in the case of the Russian project? How did they make the bulk of that money disappear?
Well, you know, obviously I'm surmising or speculating, but here's the way I think they did it, one of the ways I think they did it and are doing it. So with respect to the 145, there is no record that I see in any of the Clinton Foundation filings of a $145 million donation coming in from anywhere in 2009 or in any year. So as a guess, and in fact, for 2009, I checked it just a moment ago, there's two categories of donations that go into a foundation, generally two big ones. One is contributions, and those typically are the bits and bobs that come in from the public. The total amount of contributions that are booked in 2009 going to the joint venture up in Canada, which is called the Clinton GIUSTRA, G-I-U-S-T-R-A, Sustainable Growth Initiative, was $100, one Benjamin, and $1.5 million of grants. So in a year where supposedly $145 million may have gone to the Clinton Foundation for that, you know, Canadian enterprise, only $1.5 million is shown. So what, as a guess, they may have done is they asked the people to route it to the joint venture and then sent the money out of the joint venture to parts unknown, recording a net number of $1.5 million. Now, I'm guessing. Now, one of the reasons this is extremely serious is that by U.S. law, well before 9/11, there's a very serious law that if you have more than $10,000 in a foreign bank account under your control, you have to declare to the Treasury Department each account, and then on the IRS forms for a charity, you have to declare in what countries you have such accounts. I don't have the filing in front of me, but if the group wants to take a look at the Clinton Foundation 2009 Form 990, I don't believe you're going to find Canada as a country listed where they have a bank account. Now, to operate the Clinton GIUSTRA joint venture, they must have had a bank account in Canada. When you go on the tax forms in Canada, what you find is that there's a reference made to it's a joint venture between the Clintons and Frank GIUSTRA, who is a Canadian national, but it's operated by the Clinton Foundation from New York. There's no in what's called an agency agreement. Now, an agency agreement, to get not get deeply into the weeds, an agency agreement is when if Utrecht Lead has a foundation down in Florida that wants to, let's say, fight HIV/AIDS in Africa, but you don't have the authority to do it. It is possible to route the money to a foundation that does have the authority to do it. And one of the mechanisms for that is, or it may be possible, I should say, depending on the various state, federal, and foreign laws, is by setting up what's called an agency agreement. Now, the Clinton Foundation, I don't see any evidence that it ever amended its articles of incorporation to have the power, validly, to carry out the activities which it may have carried out on behalf of the Clinton GIUSTRA Foundation. But what I think they did is they created this 50-50 joint venture. The Clinton Foundation in New York was supposed to operate it. The people who are on the board of this Clinton Foundation, Eric Nonax, N-O-N-A-C-S, is one of those people, was apparently in the period around 2009 or before or after or during, may have been also working in a private capacity for Frank GIUSTRA without disclosing any of this. You're not allowed to do that without making appropriate disclosures. You can't simultaneously be doing energy deals and mining deals around the world for your employer, while also, in theory, operating and controlling a charity without disclosing all this, because that's an obvious place where you can have conflicts of interest. So I think they used this joint venture as sort of a trap where money could be sent to it, and then they would decide, well, we don't need to account for the money that went to the joint venture in our parent company financial statements, which is a novel interpretation of the of accounting regulations and the law. Of course you have to account for it. Another thing that's of great concern, when you study this type of stuff, U.S. laws and Canadian laws are very strict when you operate internationally. You must have, as let's take a U.S. case, if you're a U.S. charity operating internationally, you've got to control the foreign operations tightly from a U.S. base. And the reason for that under U.S. law, I think, is that, you know, charities allow their donors tax relief for making donations, tax benefits. You lower your tax bill for making a donation to an American charity. Well, why should the American taxpayer subsidize international benefits going to foreign citizens?
Besides which, it sounds like this arrangement sounds like the perfect arrangement for money laundering.
You got it. And you know, money laundering and roach motels, right? The roaches check in to the foundation and they don't check out. So absolutely. And so going back to a second part of your question to try to answer it, the Clintons have long fraternized, or whatever the right word is, with like-minded politicians around the world who believe in this globalist nonsense, which I do think is nonsense, doesn't benefit people in anybody in the United States, frankly, and other countries that have been long involved in economic activity. They have long fraternized in this group. They're very well plugged in to multilateral aid organizations like the World Bank, like the International Finance Corporation, like the many non-governmental organizations around the world and charities around the world that all believe in this stuff. And so many of their acolytes, proteges, run these organizations. So they have the ability, if Utrecht Lead wants to do a deal in Trinidad and Tobago to enhance the water supply, let's say, put in some kind of irrigation system, and you need $100 million, and you don't have the $100 million, but you're willing to contribute $50,000 or $25,000 to the Clinton Foundation, it is possible that the Clintons and their allies can unlock financing, concessionary financing, even grants from the World Bank, from the IFC, from, you know, the UK aid organization, from Norway, whatever, to turn that project into a reality. And because these international projects often operate in countries where the regulatory apparatus is not up to snuff, you know, and because many of these projects involve construction, which is, you know, rife with opportunity for corruption, you say it's a $100 million project. What if you get $100 million and only spend $20 million to complete it? You know, what if you puff up your estimate of how much this is going to really cost and steal the balance? And, you know, cut in the Trinidad and Tobago president for a piece of it. No one's going to know back in Washington, D.C. or Arkansas or New York where you regulate it, because the regulators here in Washington, D.C. and in most states don't have the bandwidth and the resources to go out, get on a plane, go into the bush, and really check and see what should it cost to put up a water irrigation system in Trinidad and Tobago. So I think the Clintons and their team figured this out a long time ago, perhaps when he was president. They also figured out that the scale of the black market, you know, the unregulated market, which includes, you know, illicit sums, it includes governments moving money around the world that they don't want their constituents to understand they're moving for various reasons, some good, many bad. They realized that this was a big area and that, you know, lots of more than crumbs could spill off the dinner table. And I think they on purpose set this Clinton Foundation up and its various affiliates up to be, as you say, a dirty laundry.
But, you know, at a very fundamental level, they should have been found out a long time ago, because the papers that they submitted to support a request for as a 501c3 organization, a nonprofit organization under the federal tax codes, had nothing to do with anything that they ended up doing, as a matter of fact. And this makes it illegal to abuse and misuse the purposes of a foundation under the 501c3 tax code. They never seemed to have notified the IRS that they're changing their purpose, original purpose being to build a presidential library, period, that would be headquartered in Arkansas. That's it, to house the president's papers and so forth so that people could go there and study them. None of the things that they ended up doing, all these, quote, good works that they ended up doing, had anything to do with the initial permission they were granted to establish a foundation. The foundation had one purpose only, and then we start hearing about the Global Initiative and the AIDS Project, and they have farming projects all over Africa, and the production of generic drugs to deal with and distribution of these pills to combat AIDS and HIV all over the world. And they're getting into some really interesting ground that if they were within the scope of the law, they would have been found out a long time ago, which means they had protection at the IRS.
You're absolutely right, Eutrice. I mean, I think what happened back in, so to speak, back in 2000 is very similar to what happened in 2016. And remember, in 2000, the punditry all expected Al Gore to blow away George W. Bush, except in George W. Bush prevailed. So the activities that the Clinton Foundation, Presidential Foundation, began on October 23rd, 1997, were in quotes overseen by an IRS and by a Department of Justice that was heavily potentially influenced by the Clintons. And once George W. Bush won, or it was determined that he was won, almost exactly at the time that it was determined that he won, I forget exactly the day, but I believe it was sometime in December 2000, Lois Lerner, the infamous Lois Lerner, it was announced she would move from the Federal Election Commission over to the IRS in charge of a division within the IRS Tax Exempt Organization Department that at the time looked at complex matters relating to charities and their, you know, the so-called rulings department. So she went in there in 2001, and she would have been in a position to stop anybody, is my guess, from asking the tough questions about what was really going on at the Clinton Foundation. So while there, in the period 2001 to 2004, the mission, I would submit, for the Lerner people and for the Clinton wing of the Democratic Party was to try like heck to win the 2004 election. So, you know, with Arkansas, you know, with an ability to influence Arkansas, with Democratic allies spread around the country and the world, with many people upset with George W. Bush, they were able to carry off, you know, a gargantuan fraudulent exercise, which is actually minuted in a memo by Douglas Band in the WikiLeaks Podesta emails. I want to say it's around November 18th, 2011. He lays out all his great accomplishments. He says in that memo, look, Terry McAuliffe raised $100 million for the foundation. He couldn't raise any more, so I had to raise the extra $100 million, $65 million for the foundation, $35 for an endowment. But that's not the amount of money that was actually spent to build the complex. And I can figure that out because I have accounting training, and I'm not really, you know, the best accountant in the world. You get some serious forensic accountants looking through the actual filings, which are not on the Clinton Foundation website, but are on the New York State, California, Massachusetts Attorney General websites for 2000 to 2004. And you see very clearly that they're nowhere near $165 million in cash was spent on the Clinton Foundation, that the real number is more like 100, and that about $64.2 million was, I think, stolen from the Clinton Foundation through 2004, diverted. Where it went, maybe we'll find out, maybe we'll never find out. Where it could have gone, political campaigns, in particular the 2004 presidential election, at 2004, in that pivotal year, the only outside director with serious business and financial background was Terry McAuliffe, who is now the governor of Virginia, and then in 2004, was, I believe, chairman of the Democrat National Committee.
And he also helped the Clintons purchase their current residence in Chappaqua.
He did, indeed. He did that in 99 or 2000 without disclosing that on the Clinton Foundation website, the way you're supposed to do that. Clinton Foundation charity filings, the way you must do that, and they didn't do that. So the period, October 23, 1997, right the way through to 31 December 2004, is a period where to this day there have never been the requisite filings made, the requisite independent audits made. But yet, the materials that are in the public domain, I can tell, and I'm quite certain that Chuck Grassley, should he sink his teeth into it, can tell, that this operation, the Clinton Presidential Foundation, defrauded we the people. They you know, gave us, they erected this complex out in Little Rock. They claimed it had a value that was not its real value. They failed to disclose that they had committed bank fraud and wire fraud and mail fraud and solicitation fraud, which would gut the ability of any normal charity to operate. And they entered into an agreement, which they omit from their filings, which I found, or actually an ally of mine found, that I read carefully. It states very clearly on November 18th, 2004, the president of the Clinton Foundation represented on behalf of the trustees that for the life of a 100-year period, roughly 100-year period, the Clinton Foundation would always be a validly organized and operated charity. Yet on the very date that he signed that agreement, it was a fraud. He defrauded, and the Clinton Foundation trustees defrauded, we the people, defrauded the National Archives, and I believe have been in a conspiracy ever since to cover up the fact that they defrauded the United States government, we the people, and that is a gross violation of 18 U.S.C. 371, which you can look up for yourselves. And there are many other violations from 2004 forward that the IRS would have been in a position to see with little effort. And so going back to your original question on the 145 from Russian-controlled or Russian-affiliated entities, that's one instance where insiders at the IRS, Justice, and the attorney, and the FBI should have known there were serious unprosecuted crimes, yet did nothing serious about them. Another is in the original investigation when Comey, Mueller were involved in from 2001 to 4-5 time frame of, you know, the Markrich pardon and whether the Clinton Foundation was in that time period being used as a conduit to trade money for influence, money for leniency, money for a pardon. That's another instance. In 2009, in addition, at that roughly around the same time, or roughly during 2009, I want to say somewhere in 2009, late 2009, a man named Rajat Gupta, who was had been worldwide managing director, chairman of a big consulting company called McKinsey, he began to get in a very hot water over potential or over allegations of insider trading. Rajat Gupta, by many accounts and by in a report issued by the staff of Congressperson Marsha Blackburn, was involved hiring Chelsea Clinton and McKinsey, was involved connecting the firm you mentioned, or the generic maker of HIV/AIDS medicines, Ranbaxy. His firm was directing the efforts of that crooked firm, that diabolically crooked firm, to go from being an Indian manufacturer to a global manufacturer of generic HIV/AIDS drugs and other medicines. And Rod Rosenstein led an investigation into whether and how serious Ranbaxy's provision of adulterated drugs may have been to PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, and to other U.S. government purchasers of generic medicines, that culminated in what I would regard as a weak fine of only $500 million. May 13th, I think, or thereabouts, 2013. It was Ron Rosenstein who led that charge. He should have gotten Ranbaxy for a lot more than that. He should have been looking more seriously into the Clinton Foundation and how many Ranbaxy drugs they may have either bought themselves and distributed or encourage others to buy and distribute. He also should have been looking at the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund, which was the largest listed expense in 2010. The Clinton Foundation is a grant to the Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund at supposedly a post office box address in Baltimore, Maryland. Now, the Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund never had such an address, and it is a serious crime to make a false statement.
$10 billion. That's why I'm having difficulty containing myself. We have never had an accounting for where the $10 billion went. In which was supposed to go to rebuild Haiti. And what do we say about a special category of crime? You referred to it earlier, which was accounting for the large chunk of the $145 million. Is there a special category of crime in which American citizens are not allowed to engage in transactions of commerce that sell off U.S. assets to a foreign government to help that government build its nuclear power?
So I'm not a lawyer, and so I don't know, I can't answer that question with precision, but I do believe the way I would think about it is, if you're thinking about treason,
yes,
you know, that might be a crime, or sedition, you know, and I don't know the precise definition of either of those two terms, but, you know, if you look, just go back to simplistic stuff, and the Clintons love to distract and let ask you to look over in a different direction, away from the bunny that's hopping on top of the table. The U.S. Secretary of State absolutely cannot take an undeclared personal substantial benefit via a foundation operated by her husband and daughter, and only daughter. You can't do that. It's a serious crime. And, you know, you also can't cover it up. You know, so the people who've been involved in this, it's not simply Hillary Clinton. It's not simply Bill Clinton or Chelsea Clinton. It's every trustee. It's every executive. You can argue it's the significant donors. It's key executives. It's the accounting firms. It's the law firms. This is a gigantic, Hillary is fond of coining the term, vast right-wing conspiracy. This is a vast conspiracy. It has been operating for more than 20 years. And the question before the court of public opinion now is not, you know, is this a fraud? Of course it's a fraud. The question is, why has this unprosecuted fraud been allowed to go on for so long? That's the first question. Who let it go on for so long, and for why? And then the question, the practical question facing the trustees and then the various co-conspirators is, do you really want to maintain being a core element of this conspiracy, or an unwitting element of this conspiracy from now through November?
And by the way, we have to consider, with regard to the HIV drugs that were found to be watered down, bogus, out of date, and so forth, we have to consider the possibility that tens of thousands of people taking these bogus medications may have died. So we have a genocidal aspect to a financial crime committed specifically by the Clintons here.
Exactly. And the government donors around the world, you know better. The government of France, the government of UK, the government of Australia, the government of Sweden, the government of Norway, and more. You people know better. You operate around the world. You have known about, just like the Hollywood Weinstein scandal, everyone's shocked that Harvey Weinstein was such an ogre. Baloney. Everyone in Hollywood knew it. And these government donors, you've known about it for a long time. It is time to stand up and be counted. Now you have Chuck Grassley investigating. You may soon get the House Judiciary to investigate. You have the IRS investigating. Maybe the FBI is investigating. You foreign governments, you need to stand up. You need to push. You need to expose the full extent of this fraud. What actually happened? Not that fake fiction book that Hillary wrote. What actually happened? And people need to be called to account. No one is above the law in the United States of America, not even, and especially not, the Clintons.
We have taken quite a bit in today, Charles, and thank you for your expertise and your generosity of time and putting up with my trying to run up the stairs and run down the stairs to ask these guys to just hold off for the 1 hour. We don't want all this noise intruding in. But we have to get to other issues related to this as well, and we'll do that tomorrow We have to ask the question, to what degree Barack Obama was involved, because I strongly suspect, I've been saying this for a while, I strongly suspect that Barack Obama, being a creature of the Clintons politically, couldn't but be involved in this, couldn't but have derived some kind of benefit for affiliating himself with the Clintons, and beyond that, might even be imitating or adopting the method of business insofar as the Barack Obama Presidential Center, which he's building and is launching as an agent of change, specifically within depressed and deprived communities, is concerned. So we have to ask questions of Barack Obama, what he knew, when he knew it, and why it appeared that his administration, rather than launching a vigorous investigation of the Clintons, in fact, aided and abetted it. And other creatures that have come to our attention since then, like James Comey, with a history of protecting the Clintons, we talked about Terry McAuliffe, and other people who knew the outrageous things that were being done under the name of philanthropy. And that also is a part of our thrust tomorrow, looking at the silence, it seems, from the philanthropic world, and how
the lambs,
the silence of the lambs, how often does something? I mean, this is a major, major, major crime here, but to lesser degrees, how have the Clintons and their irregular ways of operating influenced the operations of the philanthropic world? So we have to ask that question as well. But I want to thank you so much.
Just one quick one. Thank you. Just one quick one. We also should ask, and let's see tomorrow, how much ink the New York Times, the Washington Post, the mainstream media devote to this in their editions for tomorrow. Should be interesting.
It's funny, because that's what I was talking about, you know, in a way on Monday, talking about media and how we do not expect normally that the media is actually shaping our opinions and attitudes, and there is an accelerated push by the media, I think, to assert itself as its own entity that is not to be investigated, not to be criticized, not to be touched. So thanks for being with us today, and we'll see each other tomorrow. I want to remind the audience, by the way, that Charles's reputation goes back quite a way on Wall Street, and his ferocious attention to the functionings of some of the biggest corporations really led him to expose the fact that many of them were actually overvaluing their stock to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. So that's why we trust you. So see you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.